Okay, first I want to tell you it's an honor to get to talk to you guys today, and I hope that I can give you some things that are useful for you and your kiddos. But let me tell you who I am. I taught art for 13 years in a small school in a town called Inman, Kansas. 1,100 friendly people live in Inman, Kansas. It's Mayberry, right? I was the art department, the only art department. When we broke into curriculum meetings, I met with myself. The first grader had the other first grade teacher. The band teacher had the choir teacher. The art teacher has himself, pretty much. And I love my job. I absolutely love my job. You know how you can get into this job and lose a decade? Just a decade goes flying by so fast, right? And you're so busy helping your kids, sometimes you don't come up for air and feed yourself and feed your soul. I'm going to share some stories with you today. I do a lot of brain research, and I'm passionate about brain research for one reason. We teach brains. You can say we teach kids, but we teach brains, right? And if you pay attention to the outside package, you might underestimate a child. So I prefer to think of their brain levitating 3 feet above a chair in a dark meat case, experiencing the world indirectly through what it hears and what it smells and what it sees and what it feels, you know? And I think that way. So I share stories because we remember stories. We don't remember lists of facts. If I said to you, tell me 40 things you did on your last vacation, go. Oh, by the way, fill them out on a bubble test. Go. You might do okay. Some of you would do great. Some of you would struggle. If I said, tell me the story, you'd be great. You'd remember things you forgot you remembered in context. See, we are temporal creatures that live over time. So that's why kids come home and you say, what'd you do at school today, honey? Nothing. Wait, you did a million things, but they don't recall them. They're all thrown into the junk drawer of their mind because they're not tied to a context. We go to a room that says science, we go to a room that says math, and we teach kids that these are divided. And in the brain, they're not. You ever meet a brilliant idiot? You know what I mean? They can win Jeopardy, but they can't change a tire. They memorize lists of facts. They're little Googles, right? But they can't do anything with the knowledge they have. So to me, when you challenge kids, when you give them things to do, projects, save the world things. 13-year-old girl said to me not too long ago at a conference right here in Montana, she was the keynote speaker the day before me. She said to the audience, we'll do the tests. We'll do the stuff you say. Please, just let it matter. They're screaming for context. I'm going to share my story with you of being a child growing up in poverty and kind of what saved me. But first I want to share this with you. These are the kind of kids I work with, the at-risk kids, the ones who bite. You know the ones I mean? You try to help them and they snarl, right? Hey, how's your day? Ooh, hey. Nip the tip of the, woo. Wow, it's tough, man. You take them home with you, you worry over them, you know? It's hard because when you help them, sometimes they get in trouble. You ever help a kid and then you teach them how to have dreams and they go home and misalign with the culture there? Oh, you think you're going to college, Miss Thang? You know what I mean? I mean, it's hard. Think about the safe space you got to create for a kid. First, the ability to dream, and then to sustain that dream, and to make the parents so proud that they help the kid sustain that dream without making them the family hero and creating so much pressure that the kid has a nervous breakdown. I don't know how you do it. You guys are locksmiths. Working that lock, working that lock, working that lock until... and the kid's out. They're free. They can do things, right? It's not easy, this job that we have called teaching. This is me in 1966. And kids see this and they say, oh, daguerreotype. No, that was Polaroid. Just because it's black and white doesn't mean it was a civil war, okay? This is me sitting in my high chair on a stop between states. I lived in 20 states growing up. Every now, people say, oh, military brat. No, son of an alcoholic outlaw. Whenever Dad broke the law, we moved. Immediately, that night, Dad called it the midnight run. And if you asked the wrong question at school, we moved. If the counselor asked the wrong question, we moved. We moved a lot, right? So I never had much that was precious. In fact, with my 18-year-old son, I have very little to hand him down because we didn't have anything, just life lessons. That's it. So there I am. Here's me and my brother, and on the right, that's my brother. For years, I thought he was the Antichrist. My brother tried to kill me every day of my life. soon as I came out of the womb, he started trying to kill me. One day he said, "Have I hit you yet today?" And this is how stupid I am. I don't think so. Ow. My brother was evil, so my parents got him a BB gun. Brilliant, right? They bought him a BB gun, a Daisy, you know, the kind you do this. We were watching The Rifle Man. You know how he'd go, flunk, flunk. So my brother was like The Rifle Man. And I begged him, "Can I shoot your gun?" And he'd say, "No, you can never shoot my gun." But my brother one day said, "Hey, you want to shoot my gun?" Now, something in my head should have said, "Why is he being nice to me?" But I didn't. I was like that dog on Up. I'm like, "Yes, I would like to shoot the gun. I will shoot the gun. Please, shoot the gun. I will shoot the gun. I would very much like that." He takes me way out in the woods, incredibly far into the woods. Then he turns around and says, "I'm hunting you." I went, "No!" You ever had one of those dreams where you try to run, but you're like, "Mary Moon." I'm running as fast as I can. He's taking aim from the grassy knoll, you know. I just make the headlines. Oh, he shot me twice. One went under the skin. Tell me what friend you have that would help you remove that. I mean, do you have such a... You can't... And then he would grab me just before we got home and say, "Tell Mom and Dad and I'll kill you." And my brother has crazy eyes. You ever meet anyone with crazy eyes? People, you tend to listen to people with crazy eyes, right? My brother is now a preacher. Yeah. People are going to heaven because my brother has crazy eyes. Believeth in the Lord. Okay. I believe. My brother is on Facebook with me, you know. My family is mixing with my profession. I don't know how I feel about that. Raise your hand if you're on Facebook. Of course you are. Now, a couple of years ago, I'd ask that question and one or two hands would go up. What pulled me onto Facebook? My kid is there. He's going to pee in the pool. I'm a lifeguard, okay? I don't like it so much, but I have to be there because our kids are playing on digital playgrounds without recess attendance. It's that simple. I drag myself there. I love me some Facebook, and I hate Facebook. People are friending me that I didn't like in school. Why are they friending me? If I don't friend them, will they stalk me? I don't need this, you know? This is the world we find ourselves on. You know, this group of ladies called the Digital Grannies. These are older ladies, and they called me and said, "Can we come and do a workshop on Twitter and Facebook?" I said, "Why?" "We want to mentor our grandkids without embarrassing them." What a sweet idea. They don't even get continuing ed points. They just kiss. They come and they learn and they're scared, and the kids like these guys back here are helping them, because it's one thing to be on Facebook. It's another not to do something stupid on Facebook. The room smells like learning, anxiety, and Bengay. Shopping for clothes at my house meant a visit to the Goodwill box. Not the store. Dad cut out the middleman. We shopped at the box. This is the scam. This is how Dad did this. On midnight on a school night, I got to learn phonics tomorrow, okay? Midnight on a school night, he takes me with him in his pickup. He's got bags of trash in the truck. He's going to pretend they're bags of clothes and put them beside the box as if the box is full. Meantime, he opens the little hatch door and I get in it. Closes it, and I fall down inside and hand out bags of clothes. That was the drill. He never gave me a flashlight, so by Braille, I'm handing out bags of clothes. And people donate things like crock pots, you know? I landed on that stuff, right? So I'm handing out bags of clothes, and one night I heard this, "Cab 215, yeah, roger 215, there's a blue GMC pickup parked outside of Elko next to the Goodwill box. Roger that, I'll never run that plate, roger." Dad's like, I'm still in the box. It's a school night. I'm scared to death. It's an hour and a half. Hour and a half later, he pulls up. Get in. And we went home and we bust open those bags, and that was school clothes shopping night. And you got what you got. Here's what I found out. People don't donate great clothes. People wear great clothes. People donate embarrassing clothes, you know. That's what I got to wear to school, the high water pants. And it was always the kids who had everything who were meanest. Why? Why, you know? Well, it's just how it was, you know? Every once in a while, some kid would be nice. Some kid, I knew this kid named John. He drove up, not in the car, he's just really big. He just sort of drove up on me. He looked like a recreational vehicle, you know? And he blocked out the sun. And he was nice to me. And he said, "Leave the new kid alone." I mean, he leveraged his power to help me. And I talked to kids. I talked to 100,000 kids last year. And I asked them, "Who do you want to be and how do you want to spend your heartbeats?" I don't preach to kids. That doesn't work. I try to talk to their hearts, you know? What do you want to be known for? Now take that to the digital. What is your digital legacy? What does that mean, Mr. Honeycutt? Anything I can Google about you isn't your digital legacy. Are you proud of everything in there? You know? Now, this is a new curriculum, by the way. Raise your hand if you made a mistake in puberty. Anyone? 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 I love you guys because people raise their hands. Yay! I go some places and no one made a mistake in puberty. It's amazing. Here's my question to you people who raised your hand and the rest. Can I Google those mistakes? Are they Googleable? Our kids are on the record. They're talking. And you know, I love digital. I love all of this. You know why? When we found the pyramids of Egypt, we knew all about the pharaohs because they had biographers. You know how long it took to find out about the slaves who built those pyramids? They didn't have a voice. Right? Any you know, historian will tell you it's hard to find out about normal people from antiquity because, again, their stuff is lost to us. These days, we can all have a biography, all of us. How are we using it? Are we building intentional biographies that represent us well, that get us scholarships, that get us jobs, that find us networks of support? Or are we just having puberty online? We can be strategic. Well, if we're not doing it, then kids are there by themselves guessing. It's a benevolent act to drag yourself into something you're not comfortable with. They say technology is anything invented after you were born. Try that on for a minute. Raise your hand if this is technology to you. Okay, ready? The cell phone. The fax machine. Me too. If that laminated thing falls off the wall behind the fax machine, I can't operate the fax machine. Can you fax me another one, you know? It's still technology. Okay, other technologies. The laptop. The abacus. Kidding. We have certain flexibilities. Think about your music flexibility. All of us have a time when we think music stopped being good. It happened to me with the funky Cold Medina. That was like a nightmare day, and I thought, this will pass. Tone Loc, remember? Oh my gosh, and I thought, this can't be a style. This will go away. Classic rock will come back. REO Speedwagon, 38 Special. I'm still waiting. But my son comes along, and I have to embrace his music. I don't have to love it, but I have to understand it if I love my son. They pull us there. I'm not a natural with this stuff. I'm what you call a 12 o'clock flasher. Sounds bad. Everything in my house is flashing 12 right now because I can't program it. So why do I do this? I do this because my kids are going to spend the rest of their lives in the future, not my past. And for too many years, I was shoplifting. I had stopped learning and made the job convenient for me. Now, I didn't know I did this. Embezzlers never know they're embezzling. They always have a good rationale. Mine was just I was busy helping kids. When they found out bacteria caused people to get infections and die, they told the surgeons during war they needed to wash their hands between patients. And many of them said, I don't have time to wash my hands. I'm too busy saving lives. Well, they killed people. You know what I mean? So I was so busy saving lives, I wasn't teaching myself. I wasn't staying current. This all kind of came to a head one day in the dark room. When you teach darkroom photography and you don't have a lot of money, you don't have one of those special doors that turns like this. So once the kids are in, they're stuck until the film is on the reel. This is all amazing stuff. If you've never done darkroom photography, back in the day you had a reel and you had to click, 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 click. I love teaching kids to do this. High school boys break wind in the darkroom. A lot, because they can, right? And I don't get paid enough and I can't leave. Right? So I'm like, and the kids are all laughing like you. So I turn into a teachable moment. Let's explore what Jordan just did, okay? Jordan released, right, gas, airborne gas and fecal matter into the air via his sphincter. It's now airborne. To smell it means it's now affixed to your olfactory gland. You are wearing his fecal matter. And suddenly, Jordan, you jerk. So we had a rule for Jordan. Anytime he needed to break wind, he had total permission in class to open the door and put his butt out the door and blow it into the hallway. So he had to stay there for a while. One day I was getting my evaluation. The superintendent was just about to reach for the knob. It was a bad day. Really, really bad day. You can only dream as big as your personal experience. Now imagine those kids you're trying to help. Okay, to move into a new life, you have to be able to imagine it as clearly as the old life. If you can't imagine it that clearly, you keep getting pulled back into the old life. See, here's your construct. This is where I live. Whatever it is, I'm used to it. Even if it's terrible, I'm used to it. Dad's terrible, but he's my Darth Vader, and I understand the empire. Right? Now you're telling me about this life, and in class, I do this. Right? Then I get home, I'm back here again. In class, you do this, and I'm kind of there. Then I get with my friends, and they pull me back. You've got to keep drawing that and helping them develop that until they can go, and that's scary, man. That's scary. You got to leave, divorce that culture to get to this next place. That's part of what we do, how we help kids imagine themselves being something. Kids ever say to you, why do I need to know this? Don't you hate that? You stayed up all night making the perfect lesson plan, and a fifth grader's asking you, why do I need to know this? But what they're really saying is, I don't understand the context. See, in their brain, this has to be useful or the brain has no room for it. And what they are is little survivors. Now, some of you are crazy. I love the crazies. The three-fingered shop teacher talking about bandsaw safety. I believe that man. That man knows from whence he speaks. Right? You know who I gravitated toward in my life? The cafeteria ladies. There's one that had a pus wart that you could see through. It was like a... But she was real. I mean, she was real, you know? And I gravitated toward those real ones. I had some teachers I called Susie Cream Cheese teachers. Susie Cream Cheese. Let me explain. Remember now, I'm coming from poverty. They wore denim and wooden apples, and they wore teaching like a handbag, an accessory. And they loved the little kids that looked like ducklings following them down the hall. I did not look like a duckling. I was more of a lizard, you know. And I could tell they weren't comfortable with me. You know, they had their arm around the future Miss Susie Cream Cheese talking to her about cute little piggy tails, and I'm standing here, and she felt my proximity, and she starts to put her arm around me, and then she saw me, and she didn't know she did it, but she pulled her arm back. Broke my heart. I'm like, what, am I not touchable? You think I want to learn from you? I like the ones that... You know who you are. You've had lice 5 times. You can only dream as big as your personal experience, and the Honeycutt dream was to one day live in a double-wide trailer with, wait for it, skirting. If you're not from the trailer park, you don't know what I mean. The rich people in the trailer park had skirting, and it matched the house. Posh. They had chocolate at Halloween. Middle class in the trailer park, corrugated tin that ran horizontal. And then, of course, the poorest people, their house was kind of on the ground. See, a mobile home isn't mobile once the tires go flat. Unless there's a tornado. It's hard to live in a dwelling that's third less safe to a ditch or low-lying area. Imagine a storm comes, you're safer if you leave your house and jump into a ditch. That's not security. This is the house I got on the bus in front of. Now, imagine my world, okay? Dad came home last night, 2 a.m. My job was to hide his guns, so he didn't have them this time, but he's mad because he knows I know where they are. He beat up Mom and I couldn't stop him. Again, right? And I got to come to school, and you've got to create a world I can believe an hour at a time. Thank God for you. It's hard. I know it's hard. But that's what we do, right? That's the job we've chosen. I mean, how do you thank someone for that? You know? That you're fighting all the things that are true in a kid's life to help them build a new one. My second biggest fear in the world... You're getting the phone call, Wes. You want to take it, or should I just push the button? Okay. Darn it, I'll get back to this. My second biggest fear in the world was tornadoes. My first biggest fear was my dad. There he is right there. That's not my dad. That's kind of how I felt about my dad. He was a scary person. You know, he died when I was 16 in a drinking party at the lake. My job that night was to be his father and to not let anything happen to dad. And he yelled at me so much that I went home. The one time I didn't babysit dad, he drowned. I felt kind of bad about that for a long, long time, and then I realized I should never have been his father. That was wrong. I still think about that, you know? You never know what kids are dealing with when they come to us. But I want to talk about the angels. By the way, this is you guys. These are all those days when you're not sure what you're doing is worth anything. And you don't know till you get that phone call in your 40s. Hey, I just wanted to tell you, thanks, man, for kicking my butt. You were the only one that held my feet to the fire. I am still in prison. Well, at least I appreciate that's their one phone call that week, you know? This is Mary Lou Burgoon, recess attendant and para, not even a teacher. Sideburns thicker than my father's. And she let me stand right here. The most dangerous place to be in school is alone. We talk about bullying and talk about bullying at school. Man, you know, I talk to kids and I say, that which you do to the least of these, you do unto me. Are you brave enough to be nice to someone no one's being nice to? Are you that brave? And I have a book and I have a curriculum. I talk to K-6 kids sitting cross-legged on gym floors all over the country about this to try to win their hearts, to be nice to the least of these, you know? She was nice. She let me stand right here, even if I might have lice. And I never had lice. I had long hair. Because I had two choices, long hair or mom's bowl cut. How many of you have a mom who went to a yard sale, got clippers, and ordained herself a barber? Anyone? They never cut the girls' hair, but the boys are optional. We're like research study people or something. She's like, oops, what? Nothing, I'll fix it on this side. I look like a sneech, man. I had this like... I'm praying to God, one of two things. Jesus, please let my hair grow fast. Or two, change the rule and let it be so I can wear a hat. Please. So those are my choices. So I had long hair. She put her arm around me anyway, and I stood right here in the shadow of her ample bosom. Out of the rain. She gave me a safe place to be until I could fit in, at least the week I was at Hawthorne Elementary. And I came back and I found her. When I graduated college, I found all of these people. I drove up to her house in Ottawa, Kansas. She's sitting on the front porch in living room furniture, because that's how we roll in Ottawa, Kansas. I pull up and I walk up to her like she's Yoda, you know? Mary Lou Burgoon?
Yeah.
Kevin Honeycutt? Who? It hurt a little because I thought it meant something to both of us, you know. I said, Hawthorne Elementary, 1978, you saved my life. You were the only person that was nice to me. She said, ah, shut up, it's just my job. Just my job to save my life. Wow, big deal. This is the secretary, Dorothy Anderson, from that same school. And every day she sent me these letters. These are not technology, this is Oriental Trading. Every day in class I got mail. I got mail.
Apparently I got another letter.
I'm over there in my, you know, desk. It's full of junk on the bottom. You know, it looked like a pack rat mess. And let me tell you why. If Mom took the money that we did have and bought me paper, and I opened the paper, I couldn't throw away the plastic because it was part of what Mom gave me. No, everyone thought I was just messy. I wasn't. I loved everything Mom gave me. Mom gave it to me. I couldn't throw it away. So my desk was a heap that she was embarrassed about when she saw it. And I'd get my letters and I'd read them. And this woman sustained me. Remember now, I go home that night and Dad's cussing and calling me names, and I go to my room and get out the shoebox with those letters. They smell good. They smell like her. Dad didn't smell good. So she must be right. That's what I held on to. I never lost these letters. I laminated these letters. When she died 7 years ago, and I love her forever, and I'm going to pay it forward every way I can. So when I'm teaching kids in juvenile detention, it's because she had my back in 1978. And that's what we do. So I've been teaching in juvie. Why? I have no idea. They asked me if I would. Let me tell you about this experience. And some of you have worked with these tough, tough kids. You know what I'm talking about. But they bite. They're tough, right? I walk into juvenile detention. These doors go. And you're in. Now you're in. Three armed guards with Glocks, stainless steel tables, jumpsuits. You've been there. Came with me, man. It's a little scary when you first go in. Because the kids, they will stick you with something. And you can never leave a pencil behind. If you leave a pencil behind and someone gets stabbed, that's on you. They have rubber pencils. And I'm teaching art to these kids, and they're giving me that look like, I dare you to come up in here. Mm-hmm. So let's say you just came in intake and you're angry. I would never teach you. I teach her, and I teach her. I feed her. Hey, that's an amazing drawing. You've got talent. You've had classes? No? Oh, my gosh. Okay, you need to keep working on that. I just walk away. She's like, what? Uh-huh. Then I feed you. Then I feed her again. Now I'm in. So I got an hour to 15 minutes to hook them and 45 minutes to cook them. But I've learned again, without technology, with none of this, it's about relationships. It's about respect. It's about teaching the scariest kid in your class like the only one you trust. This cost us. I had this big old giant kid, and I knew he was scary. He cuts everyone's tires. He had a reputation. I said, Bill, you got my back this year? It's a tough class. He looked at me like, don't you know who I am? You know how it is. It's a little bit scary. Okay. This costs you because when they help you loud. Everyone shut up! Honeycutt is trying to teach. It's all yours, Mr. H. Thank you, Bill. Oh, my God. 1979, Mr. Austin got the Digitor. Raise your hand if you've seen a Digitor. Raise your hand if you know where it is. Find it. It's worth $1,000. What, Kevin? The Intel chip inside that Digitor was the first commercial Intel chip ever put out, and collectors around the world want that chip. Google this. If you find a Digitor, you can buy 2 iPads. How many of you are thinking, I'm going to find a Digitor? Now, the Digitor was a calculator with feet. That's all it was, calculator with feet. But it was the first emoticon in history, because if you got more questions right than you got wrong, a smiley face popped up. And a frowny face if you didn't. It was an emoticon. Check this thing out, right? Well, Mr. Austin was brilliant. I'm circling the academic bowl in math. By the way, I'm flunking everything, and I'm not stupid. I'm otherwise intelligent. You got to find it, though, because it's hidden. I'm emotionally compromised. It's not on purpose. It's not a choice. I'm just damaged. If you make me come in the front door like everybody else, I will fail you. I don't mean to. I'll stay up all night reading this stuff, but I'm going to fail you. Now, I like you. And I want you to like me, and I want you to think I'm smart, and I don't want to fail you. I'd rather quit school or act like I don't care than fail you straight up. But if you make me come in the front door, if you let me come in the window, I'll bring extra stuff. Let me be creative. Please let me show you I'm smart in another way. Can you give me choices? There's benevolence to learning different tools, that you guys are here today doing that. I'm a digital dumpster diver, looking for what works, and I look for what's free, because the schools I work with don't have any money, right? So we look. My site, if you go to kevinhoneycutt.org and click the toolbox, has hundreds of things you can click and use to encourage kids to write and to read and to cite their sources and to make movies. We can use this stuff. We can give these kids a chance. Now, let me tell you why it's benevolent. You ever meet 2 siblings, one's an A student and the other one's flunking? Uh-huh. I say, what is this thing? What is this thing? Here's my theory on that. Not burdened by research, but here's my theory. The younger daughter says, she's already the best at everything, why should I try? So if I show you all something new right now that none of you have ever seen, every one of you has the possibility of being the best at it. Is there a motivation there? You know what I mean? So it's a wild card, right? Maybe that at-risk kid with long hair, maybe that girl, you know, who doesn't know she wants to come to school, she's going to own that thing, and I've seen it over and over again. So there's benevolence. So you're still getting your standards, and you're still hitting your concepts. You're just doing it a different way. Mr. Austin brought me to his desk and said, Kevin, this thing came in. I don't know how to make it work. Can you test this for me? I can't use it with the class if I don't know its math is accurate. Yes, sir. Brilliant. Isn't he brilliant? I took it home. He let me take it home. The whole family's gathered around like villagers with, fire. And I was the only one in school that had ever touched the Digitor. He had me doing math around the clock for 2 weeks, this man. And I accidentally got pretty good at math, and I brought it back to him with my final report in hand. Mr. Austin, the Digitor is 98% accurate, because I was 2% wrong. Sneaky. He used technology to win me back, to get me into the boat when I was floundering. I never forgot that little lesson, and I believe this is true. Empowerment comes from being trusted to attack learning according to your own strengths. Raise your hand if you agree with that. And you don't have to. You don't have to, right? As an at-risk kid, this was a big deal to me. I'm going to New Oxford Junior High School in 1980. Dad had done something, and we moved again. Now, I found out that in Pennsylvania, I was an idiot, 2 grade levels behind. I had just moved from Tennessee, where I was 2 grade levels ahead. All I did was move. I was so smart in Tennessee, they didn't know what to do with me. They put me on independent study. I went to the library and read Funkin' Wagnalls and such. They said, that Yankee, small heart. 2 syllables for smart. Small heart. Let me explain. Okay. Living in Tennessee, in the mountains, Pelham, Tennessee is where I was going to school. The teacher was teaching about the Civil War. They're still mad, by the way. Okay. And the teacher was teaching, and he made it sound like it all ended in a draw. So I raised my Yankee hand. He said, yes. I said, you are aware the South lost the war, right? Yeah, it was this quiet. I heard some kid mutter under his breath, that Yankee's gonna die. I was happy to move. But I got to Pennsylvania where I was behind in everything. They wanted to put me in special classes. I thought, how could this be true? And Miss Zumbrun was teaching math fast. She was teaching fast. 28 junior high kids in the room, and she teaches a concept that I missed. I missed it totally. And she checked in with me. You understand, right, Kevin? In front of 28 junior high kids. What am I going to say? The new kid's smart. But I didn't get it. I didn't get it. And she wasn't rewindable. Let's pretend just for a minute that all you did was buy a flip cam for $79, put it on a student desk and hit record, and just record your lessons and put them on your website so kids can rewind you again and again, not in front of everyone. If you just did that, and don't wait till you're good at it. If you waited till you had enough money to have kids, how many would you have? Jump out there and start. Just jump out there and start. If that kid doesn't have a computer, there is a library. I would have gone to the public library and rewound Mrs. Zumbrun 100 times if necessary. I don't want to be stupid. But not in front of everyone, please. Not in front of everyone. The benevolence of rewindability is a big deal. So, Mrs. Haas, I'm flunking English. I'm flunking everything she's doing. And she recognizes this. So she says, Kevin, why don't you just be creative with your next report? Just be creative. And I went home and said, woohoo! I found the Rice Krispies box, cut out the front, made winders with coat hangers. I stayed up till 2 in the morning doing illustrations. I put a Rayovac flashlight in the back. I invented PowerPoint in 1980. Imagine me now getting on the bus, so excited I'm going to bust. I cannot wait for third hour. I can't wait for the first time that year because I had this thing she let me build. And the other kids were doing their reports, wah, 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 wah. It was my turn. I said, hit the lights. Turned on the rail back. And I started into Watership Down. And she looked at me like I was a unicorn. I saw her see me. I stepped outside my body and I saw her see me for the first time as a learner, as a bionic empowered learner. And all she did was give me choice. I did the same work. I did more work. And I never forgot the story because I did the illustrations. I went farther than she wanted. And I would have done it again, but she never let me be creative again that year. That was her one exception. Everything else was laminated. You know, we laminate things. I could change education in one night, break into every classroom and burn every file cabinet. These legacy lessons that we have are killing us. They say we make our environment, and after that, it makes us. If you're going to your classroom this year and you're putting the exclamation point right on the same spot where the sticky tack stains are from last year, you're recycling. And before long, that uninspires you. And shake things up. We're already in a cinder block world. Can't we make it more interesting? Is it possible? Ever see a kid launch right in front of your eyes, out of nowhere? You know what I'm talking about? They leave scorch marks on the tile. We live for this, right? Don't we live for this? That kid, everyone predicted their academic demise, suddenly, and you never know what it's going to be. Because I'm a digital dumpster diver, I have so many keys, I'm going to find the key. The more you have, the more you have. A day like this, when you learn new stuff, collect that stuff. Here's the truth. You don't have time to memorize all this stuff today. This is a drive-by. This is leasing with an option to buy. But pick up one or two things that you make them yours, and then make friends with people. She's going to be great at this. I'm going to go to her. I'm going to be great at this. I'll help you. We'll help each other. We'll help each other help those kids. Will be a community of people that help. So this concept, digital dumpster divers, doesn't disinvite anyone. Even reluctant teachers go, ah, yeah, I dove in the dumpster. I remember. I've gotten cardboard and some kind of disease and all kinds of things in the dumpster. So on my website, again, if you go to kevinhoneycutt.org and click on the toolbox, where did you find these tools, Kevin? I'm not smart. I'm smart, but my network is brilliant. I'm networked. Today you're going to talk about personal learning networks, and some of the breakout sessions in the next couple of days, people are going to say Twitter. You're going to hear words like that, and sometimes you go, Twitter, Twitter, Schmitter, why the heck? I hate the word. And you know, I hate some of the words because they sound weird. Don't let them disinvite you. Twitter is thought casting, pure and simple, thought casting. So Twitter is as good as how well you build your network. If all of you were in my Twitter network and I'm in yours, we can help each other. I only collect good people. I don't collect people who cuss because I can't have bad words on my screen. I collected one heck of a think tank. You would not believe what I have in my back pocket. How many? Well, I'm on different networks. Between Facebook, Twitter, and Plurk, and my Ning networks, I'm connected directly to over 10,000 minds. good ones. So if I like you, I'll tell you what I think. If I really like you, I'll tell you what they think. I'll ask your question to the edgiverse. So when we leave this conference, we don't have to really leave. We can stay connected and help each other. We won't talk every day. You're busy. So am I. But when we really need each other, we can be there for each other. And in the end, it's for the kids, right? The smarter you get. I'm going to share some ideas with you that I've been using for a while, okay? First of all, let me ask you this question. How many people typically read what we assign our kids to write in schools? Typically. How many? What do you think? One? You? More? Now, some of you have a blog in class, and everyone in class has access because it's on the intranet. It's on the network at school, and that's cool. That's one way, right? And some of you are actually publishing things on the web out there to the world. And that's cool. There are rules of the road here. You got to be careful with elementary, but junior high and high school. But giving kids an authentic audience. Writing is a social medium designed to be read by lots of people. When only one person reads it, what if I think you don't like me? Even though I'm wrong, what if I think you don't like me? How hard am I going to try? She doesn't like me. I might as well not even try. Can we let it be that fragile? I had a college professor who saw me as a letter C. To him, I was a C. I knew that. Because the hardest, I could try really hard, I get a C. I barely try, I get a C. I started thinking he wasn't even reading my stuff, so I tested him. The next paper I handed in, I put a trap on page 2. If you've read this far, check this box. I got it back with a big, fat, red C, and he didn't check my box. I said, I'm going in. No, you'll make him mad. I pay his salary. I walked in. Hey, how'd you like my paper? Oh, it was average. I was, as the C would indicate. Did you notice anything interesting about my paper? Not in particular. You didn't read it. I beg your pardon. How dare you? No, how dare you? If you're going to guess me a grade, guess me an A. I got a C in the class. So I go out there and I find sites like Lulu, LULU.com. Okay, and it's, now, by the way, you're going to see tools. And a lot of people, we don't mean to, but we see a tool and we categorize it in our minds and we limit it. See, we can cook with new spices now. We don't have to make meatloaf anymore. We can see things differently. I find Lulu self-publishing for free. And don't marry Lulu. There's 6 other sites on my tool page just as good. It's one site that lets you self-publish. In the old days, if you wanted to publish, you found a publisher. Good luck. Most of them won't take you unless you've been published. Or you could go to a vanity press where they charge you $1,000 to print 100 books. You give your mom 2, you still have 98. Lulu comes along, self-publishing, you get an account, upload your Word document, choose cover art, click publish, and it's available worldwide, if you choose. If you really want to put it out there, you can put it into bookstores and give it a barcode and do the whole thing, or you can keep it private, and you can just buy your own book. But this costs nothing. How do they pay the bills, Kevin, you ask? Thank you for asking. Psychically, I could just feel that. Here's what happens. Someone orders your book, Lulu makes one, ships it to them, and sends you the price margin you set up when you set up the account on that particular book. Can you say Kool-Aid stand on steroids that encourages writing? Lulu also does beautiful photograph books and manuals, DVDs and CDs and school calendars, also e-books for the iPad. You can export to that format. You could set up a storefront and be a publishing house, or your kids could. What are you thinking? This is interesting. And some of you have been making books with your kids for a long time. It's work, right? It's a lot of work. It's hand work. My wife still does this with her K-4. My wife teaches K-4 in a small school, and she's the only K-4 teacher. She has 5 grade levels. I rub her feet and keep my mouth shut. But she's on Twitter, and she's on Classroom 2.0, and she's networked because she was very much alone before that. And she was burning out all by herself with this mission that she had. So it kind of changed her life. So I want to share a little bit about Lulu with you guys. You ever seen this book? Who's Who in American High School? $50 book. Why do people buy it? My name, page 256, upper right-hand corner. If that's exciting, shouldn't we do something with our kids? What if we did Best Writers 2011-2012 for your school? Right, the best writer in our school strut their stuff on the pages of this hallowed book. Can't we sanctify the writing? That belongs in the library. Every grade level should have one, a compendium for the entire school. Let kids be published authors. Grandma's going to want it. Kids are going to say, I made the book last year, and I think I'm in there again with one of my essays and two of my poems. What's the motivation now? You know what I mean? Not just an assignment, but I'm a published author. And by the way, they might want to get their own storefront and become an author after that. So let me share a couple of real stories with you. I had this little girl that I was working with, a junior high girl, and she's hard, man. She's tough. She's mean. She snarls. And a lot of teachers had given up on her. They were done. She's in junior high, and they're done. Not only that, but they don't like her personally. I mean, how can you not like one of our customers? If she came in the emergency room and we were doctors, we wouldn't say, you broke your leg? Why don't you sit down and think about what you did? You fix the leg. You fix the leg, right? That's what you do. So this girl's mean and she's tough. I did a little background research on her and found out that she's angry for a good reason, man. When she was a little girl, the police shot her father right in front of her. And his gun wasn't loaded. They call it suicide by police officer. She's mad. She'd been mad for years, but she's a little poet, because they usually are. She's got a handful of little sweaty poems every time I see her. These are hard poems to read. They break your heart. They're not nasty. They're hard to read. These are tough words. But I know she's got poems, and I find Lulu. Now, I'm not going to do Lulu with a junior high kid unless I test it first. I tame the tool. You find a new cool tool, tame it first. Make sure it's safe. I published two of my plays on Lulu that you can download for free. They're worth every penny. And once I did that, then I understood Lulu. Then I felt like I could help her publish. So I said, I know you're a poet. Have you been published? She said, what? I said, have you been published? No. Would you like to be this afternoon?
Maybe.
Do you have those in Word?
Uh-huh.
Let's get you published. So we sat down and we published 10 of her best poems. She called it Saving Me Poetry from My Heart. She wanted $24.95 for the book. In paperback. I can't afford to buy the book. I want to buy it and give it to her, but $24.95. I said, sweetie, other books in this genre with 10 pages, what are they going for on Lulu? I don't know. Can you look? Okay. She marks it down to $5.52. I don't know why, but I bought the book. It took 3 days to come to my house. 3 days. And we had just uploaded the thing. I got the book, and I went to the school, Pleasant View Academy outside of South Hutchinson. And I walk in there. She is in the hall, and I walk up to her, and I hand her her book. And she took it from my hands with the reverence of a Bible. She opens it slowly and says, I misspelled everything. And for the first time in her life, she cared about spelling. Why? It's on the rubric. It's in the standards. She's an author. She's teaching every other kid how to be an author. To me, that's exciting. That didn't exist 10 years ago, and that's exciting. Raise your hand if you're thinking, interesting, interesting. Yeah. Now, if you do this, don't do it for work. Do it for you first. Here's my rule. Let it be personal before it's professional. Too often in school, we buy something new and say, we paid money for this. You need to buy, gosh, use it. We create prisons instead of playgrounds. Do your own book first about your kids or your grandma's recipes. Cooking from the Heart, Food from Grandma's Kitchen. That's your book. Your siblings want it anyway, whoever has those recipes. Letters Home from the War from Dad. Publish that book first. And once you do that, and you know why you're going to do it, even though you trip over stuff? Because you love your dad, and you love your grandma, you know, and you love your kids. And then you'll get past all those hard things. And then you'll know how. And then, by gosh, what can we do with that in school? How might we use that to motivate learners? So our school this year is doing its yearbook on Lulu. We're not sending the usual $30,000 check to Justin's. That's a salary. Actually, in Kansas, that's two salaries. I'm kidding. Want to be famous? How do you like me now? It's just one idea. It's one idea, right? But it's a good one. I call it the some pig principle. Some pig. So Zuckerman won't make bacon out of Wilbur. Well, art class, what I taught, was always Wilbur. And they were always looking, sharpening their knives. That bacon is so savory. I had to do something every year to be famous, right? Go to the school board with this idea. We've been editing our own yearbook all this time anyway. And if you don't know how to do it, go on Lulu, put in yearbook, and you'll find all the schools that do this. Call them. Ask them how they got started. This is a yearbook from one of the charter schools that I work with. These are at-risk kids just getting their diploma. You know who figured out how? The kids. Teacher still doesn't know how, right? But this is, sounds like a yearbook, smells like a yearbook. Didn't cost like a yearbook, and it actually made the school money. Good idea? simple idea. This book was published by one of my girls who's in credit recovery. She had a year and a half of work to do, and she got it done in half a year. You know, she told me why. When my son's born, I want him to have a mom who graduated. She worked her tail off, and the first book she published was his picture book when he was born. It's not perfect, but it's the first book she ever published. The first. I bet she's done more since then. Anyway, I want to pass this around so you can kind of say, I promise it's not perfect, but it's sincere. Yes. I'm at this school called Revere High School, and I talked about this, and they said, we're doing that. So this is their book, Revered Writing. This was the first year that they did this book, and kids submit, they have to get approved. See, you're always the executive producer, you, the teacher, and you can say, oh, it's almost good enough. And they keep working hard to get in the book, right? So I want you to talk to your shoulder partner for just a minute, and we'll come up for air after that. Seeing this one tool, and there's so many out there, if we don't know why do it? If you know why, how's easy these days? We can figure out how. What are the whys? No matter what you teach, think about what this might mean. Talk for a minute. We'll come up for air after that. Go. I'm going to jump back in. Are you getting this okay? Are you?
Yeah.
Cool. All righty.
Look at you guys.
Time goes so fast. After we're done today, there's a couple things you can do. If you up here at the top here at kevinhoneycutt.org, you can go to downloads, and I will publish this presentation and my breakout session presentation there, and you can download them from there as PDFs. I use a lot of media in my stuff, and they're big files. Okay, so if you want another way, I can Dropbox it to you or put it on your jump drive. I'm very willing to give you the whole thing, and if you use it, I'm honored. Use my stuff any way you want. I borrow, you borrow. That's how this stuff works, right? So I want to take you just a little farther into some of these things that we've been doing. I'm showing you a couple of tools, and they're really sort of metaphors, but let me give you this one to use. This is my iPad, and I put a football field on it. And I had, how many of you had that football game back in the old days that went, nah, nah. What a great breakthrough, right? Remember the kicker? Technology, right? And then it would burn out and it wouldn't work anymore, so you put it on the dryer and hope it would work and stuff like that. I still have my box of teams. I've got all the teams from back in the day, so I put them on my iPad. Now, here's what I did. I juxtaposed past and present on purpose to create a middle ground where everyone's invited. The tech nerds go, iPad. And the people who don't know technology go, that's those football players from back in the 70s, right? It's that middle space where everyone's invited. That's on purpose. But say this, good quarterbacks throw the ball where the receiver is going to be, not where they're standing when the ball is snapped. A quarterback sees through time. They throw the ball into the future with the faith that the receiver will be there. And good teachers throw education where kids are going to be, not where they're standing right this minute. We have to see the future. We're pioneers. Now, we get indicted for that sometimes. People say, must be nice to have the time. What they're saying is, you're playing with those tech toys while I'm busy doing important teacher stuff. And I would tell you this, if a doctor came into pre-op with me, opened a black bag, and took out a jar of leeches, I'd go somewhere else. I expect to get a current education, not one that's convenient because you've recycled 30 years. You know, I want more than that. I expect more than that. And our kids expect more than that. So you guys are pioneers out there going over the next hill to see what the dangers and opportunities are on behalf of your kids. For too long, our kids have done it by themselves. We got to get there. And we've got to get leaders who anoint that team and tell everyone to thank you, don't spank you. You go home and you're kind of watching Dancing with the Stars, but you're still online learning because you don't stop, you know? Thank you. Thank you for that. My kids thank you for that, you know? You're not just doing convenient teaching. So another tool that I've noticed, I'm going to tell you this story. This teacher has been teaching the same unit for 32 years. It's her cities unit. Every kid gets a 2x2 square of cardboard. They make a business. They learn about cities, governance, and infrastructure at 5th through 8th grade. It's popular. It's an institution in this school. Is it getting kids ready for the future? It's better than a worksheet, but it's really Elmer's glue and popsicle sticks. Moms and dads like it. They walk through like Godzilla when the whole city comes together on parent night, right? But is it getting kids ready for the future? Well, I don't know. This boy made this building he called the School of Doom. I don't think he was into the project. same fifth grader using software that's free called Google SketchUp. Raise your hand if you use Google SketchUp. I want to relook at SketchUp. A lot of us see it and go, cool, I can't wait, I'll tell the art teacher. Stop. This belongs to all of us if we see it that way. The hands-on learner will thank you if you teach literature this way. Literature? How could you teach literature this way? Glad you asked. Those two girls over there, they're not reading Poe. I assigned it, they're not reading Poe. But they love hands-on, they love technology. So I hit them with this, like Mr. Austin hit me with a Digitor. Hey girls, can you take SketchUp and design the interior that Poe describes in the poem The Raven? What are you going to have to do first? But now it's research for your three-dimensional virtual project, right? It's Trojan horse learning, is what it is. Here's why I like SketchUp. If you worked on that, you're going to argue about the script. You've got the fireplace wrong. Clearly in the fifth stanza, Poe says, and you ever had one of those moments when it's working and you're afraid to let on, but you're like, it's working. Shh, shh, shh. You're just excited. I've seen this. Now, when you're done, you can give that file to him, and he can add more details, and he can give it to him, and he can add more details, and we can collaborate. People come to your school and say, our kids need to do 21st century collaboration. What does that mean? To me, working in some space together that uses a digital tool, either online or in software, and this you can do for free tomorrow. So this girl made this building in paper. I called it a teepee. Be careful what you call kids' work, because you're usually wrong. Nice zebra.
It's an octopus.
Sorry. I said, cool teepee. She said, it's not a teepee. This is what she wanted it to look like. This is what she did in Google SketchUp. So just going to give you a drive-by flavor of this thing. Raise your hand if you have a Nintendo Wii at your house. A Wii. I love the Wii. It changed everything. I can beat my kid in video games for the first time in our lives. You know why? I can bowl in real life. I'm from the trailer park, baby. I can bowl. My son cannot bowl. I bought the Wii Fit because I'm a Wii Fat. So I bought the Wii Fit. How many of you have that? First time you climbed on, okay? When she, that cute little voice, when you step on, she makes this sound like you squished her. I'm like, woo! So you climb on, and that little thing goes, measuring. And then in front of my family, she says, that's obese. My wife is laughing. My kid is laughing. I said, shut your pie hole. Shut it. Climb off. I climb back on because I'm not a quitter. She does it again. Measuring. One at a time, please. Hey. I have lost 15 pounds on the Wii in the last couple of months. Yes, you're welcome. Woo-hoo. You know why? If you skip a day, she gives you grief.
Too busy to work out yesterday, Kevin?
Shut up, you don't know my life. But I like it when it tells me to yell at my wife. Honey, the Wii's mad. Apparently you're slacking or something's going on. Be careful if you do the Wii with your kids, because I did the boxing thing. You know, I used to box. Well, kind of. Okay, I didn't really do it very well. But I'm boxing with my kid, and I'm taking him down, man. But my heart is a factor. I'm like, you're going down. I feel the cold, icy hand of the Reaper on the back of my neck. I'm like, can't breathe. And my son's like, you're going down. Be careful with that one. But the bowling thing is cool. I'm seeing senior citizens in retirement homes doing bowling tournaments from wheelchairs. I'm seeing grandma sitting beside granddaughter mentoring inside a video game, and I think that's cool. The 13 buttons disinvited us. You know, what did 13 buttons do? We had the joystick and the fire button. Remember? 13 buttons? 12 o'clock flasher, right? I don't know how to make those work. So I think it's a good thing. Well, I look at this, and why I'm saying all this is because this software is a generation of software that doesn't have a tutorial as thick as the Bible. Remember Adobe Illustrator? How thick is the book? It's as thick as the Bible, right? I mean, how can God get his word unto his people in fewer words than Adobe wants? It taught me that I'm stupid, basically. There was just too much there. I'm living at the school. My wife calls at midnight. I'm still at the school. She says, you like being married? I said, until now, yes. She said, get home. I said, I have to learn this because the kids are going to do this tomorrow. Get home. You don't understand. I have to be at least a day ahead. Get home. I went home. The kids came the next day. I said, this came. Could you make a tutorial for me? They said, Honeycutt, we know you're old. We got your back. And I stopped trying to teach technology and started teaching with technology. We don't teach the pencil. Today, kids, we're going to talk about compressed graphite sandwiched between wafers of wood. We don't turn that into curriculum, right? Why would we? But I was trying to teach technology. I went back to teaching art. I became a tradigital teacher that day. Traditional and digital. I'm good at traditional, and I do it when appropriate. But I say, kids, both of these exist. Either way, it's due Friday. Same expectations, same standards, same rigor. Do you understand? No problem. And what do? They teach each other. And I go back to teaching art. Right? There's a big barrier there where people think they have to be experts. So look at this interface. Look for hard words. Heck, there are no hard words. There's just a guy standing there. Don't let the kids erase the guy. He gives them a sense of proportion. I've seen kids design Taj Mahals the size of dog houses because they erased the guy. They lost their sense of proportion. So leave the guy, delete him at the last minute if you want to. So let's look across the toolbar here and see what they've got. They got a pencil so I can freehand if I want to. They got a rectangle so I can draw. So I'm going to click the rectangle and click the ground, and I'm going to drag this thing. Look in the bottom right-hand corner as I do this. What am I getting as I do this? So could we teach measurement, dimensions, geometry? Geometry, a three-dimensional science we largely teach on a two-dimensional page. I flunked geometry in aced art. How is that possible? I kick butt at two-dimensional, three-dimensional perspective, point perspective. I can use a ruler, but I'm flunking geometry. I saw geometry as flat, and I didn't understand how something that was supposed to be 3D could be so flat. There was something wrong in my brain. Had you let me do this, I draw this, right? I'm going to let go of my mouse and pour a concrete slab. Ready? Concrete slab. Now, I grab the push-pull tool, click, pull. Swimming pool, skyscraper, swimming pool, skyscraper. Let's move this bad boy over a little bit and let's zoom this thing down. Imagine you're a kid who's grown up playing three-dimensional video games. You get that. Suddenly you're allowed to learn this way. Thank you. Okay, now I'm going to click the roof and hit gone, hit delete. Boom, it's gone. Oh, mistake. Edit, undo, it's back. So don't worry, you can't mess up. It's like Word, right? If I click the paint bucket, wonder what happens there. Let's click that thing. Oh, I get a menu over here. Carpet and textiles. Click, click. Bricks and cladding. Click, click, click. I wonder what I could teach with this. Now, a lot of you are still thinking art, and that's cool. That's cool, but I want you to think bigger than that. If I click this box up here, it opens the Google SketchUp 3D warehouse. Where there are hundreds of thousands of already made artifacts your kids can import into their work. Woohoo! What's in there? The human ear, the human eye, the circulatory system, Andersonville Civil War prison, weapons of war, insects, the Parthenon. You may not go on a field trip, but could you create a 3D field trip, an interactive field trip? What if kids did this? Let's look at something that's been opened recently. Let's open the human brain, so to speak. Now, 8 years ago, software that did this cost about $30,000. That was already 3D and already had stuff in it. Now, I'm not saying the warehouse is chock full of everything perfect, but there's a lot of great stuff in there. So now I'm doing my report as a 3D virtual docent. Right, and I'm a decent docent. So let me open another one recent. This is the Viking ship. Pretend you're teaching ancient civilizations. This is already in there. So you don't have to draw these. Kids could just put them in a giant building and be docents. Make placards for the wall with descriptive writing or persuasive writing, writing standards. So they basically are building museums. What would that look like? How possible would that be? I wanted to show you what one crazy teacher did in my district. She actually did this with her sixth graders.
We were learning about civilizations, and our teacher, Ms. Heron, thought it would be fun to make a museum, virtual and real. When she had first told us this, we thought she was crazy.
They thought she was crazy. They say innovation dies of domestic violence. Think about that for a minute. You do it, and everyone gets scared, because if she does it, we're going to have to do it. So they sniper you. They don't mean to, but they do. This happened to me. I quit the profession and painted houses for 2 years and almost lost my house because I was so unhappy that my colleagues didn't understand me. I'd gotten out of step with them. See, I jumped up there and tried this. My at-risk kids are staying till 5. I'm not going back. But I didn't stop to tell them why. I was too busy. We need leadership that frames this for people, that says, thank our pioneers. They're going to bring this back to staff development. They're spending extra time, and they have badges, by the way. They get to vote, and no one can veto them. They get a democratic vote on whether or not we should try new things, or else we can't do innovation in our district. We're too slow. We're moving at glacial speed in a time of exponential change. This is a problem, and it's going to hurt our kids. So we got to tell people this. Tell your story. Frames are important. Frames are important. In the coffee shop, they're framing what you do anyway. We need to frame it first and best. Call what you're doing something. Every kid can succeed. Call it that. You can't be against that. What do you hate? Kids or success? What is wrong with you? That's a simple bumper sticker frame, but it's a good one. What kind of frames can we have so people can understand? Let's listen to what these kids say.
We got to vote on what we really wanted to be.
Listen to what the kids said. We got to vote on what we wanted to be, not be lectured about. Be. You get to be the thing you're learning. In art class, every kid's an artist. In music, they're all musicians. In math, they're all... Couldn't they be something? Couldn't they be astronauts? Couldn't they be physicists? Couldn't they be saving the world from an impending asteroid collision and accidentally learning physics on the way? Oh, are we that brave? Is it possible? Sounds crazy, right?
I was an archaeologist. I will be architect, cartographer,
author,
geologist.
My group was South Central America, medieval Europe,
ancient China,
ancient Mesopotamia,
Greece,
India,
ancient Rome. I don't think learning should be inside four walls, inside one textbook.
Bringing her to our district was like strapping a jet engine to a biplane. She could tear your wings off. But thank God for her. You know, I don't want her to die of domestic violence because she will lead us in new places. We have to thank these people. We fear them sometimes. We're afraid they're going to make headlines, good or bad. By the way, that's her real email address, and she told me I could share it with you. If you want to collaborate, she wants to connect her class to your class because she's ready to do it again and again. She's got all kinds of crazy ideas. So if you're one of those crazy people, write this down. She'll be thrilled if you contact her. Okay? Huh?
I was learning about civil relations, and our teacher, Ms. Heron, thought it would be fun to...
Let me jump out and try to bring it up higher so you can see it. Can you see it there? Let me get off of here. There? I'm a school board member in my second term in her district. I'm still doing that. People say, why? I have no idea. But I like to put my money where my mouth is. When I talk about something, I will either have done it or I've helped people do it. I don't talk about vaporware. I don't think it's fair to teachers to talk about vaporware. So I'm going to tell you my YouTube story. In 1979, I got my first guitar. It was an F-cut K guitar that my dad found at a yard sale for a dollar with no strings attached. It had no strings attached. So it took me 3 months for us to get enough money to buy a set of strings, and then I got the neighbor to tune it. I mowed his grass, he tuned my guitar. And so I don't know what to do. So I'm like... You know how you're just sort of hitting it, hoping something good will happen? And so I started putting my finger on there, and so I put my finger here on the second fret and the second string from the top. Then I found out if you slide it to four, two, four. And if you slide it up to five, you get this... Then I did this little... So I invented this, okay? I don't know it exists, and it's called 12-bar blues. I think I invented it. So I entered a talent show in eighth grade with only this. It was the whole song. So when I started, people thought, nice start. A minute and a half later, I'm still doing the same thing. People are throwing things at the stage. I went home and said, I'm never doing this again, never. And I threw it in the closet. But I couldn't let go of it. I couldn't let go of it. I knew I was supposed to play. I'm poor. I'm not going to get lessons. I'm stuck in a world with no options. So I go to the music store and I look at sheet music, but I can't read it. It's like, it's a language I can't read. But then I crack the code. In a lot of sheet music, they have a picture above the little lines with this part of the guitar in the picture and circles that say one, two, three. That's your fingers. I figured it out. But I still couldn't afford the books, so I would memorize parts of them and run outside and practice. So I started with Stairway to Heaven, because I'm from the trailer park, you have to start with that song. So I look at the first chord, and I run out and I practice. Then I run back in, look at the second chord, run back out. Third chord, run back out. Run back in, the guy says, freeze! Get out of my store. I said, why? You're stealing our music. I said, no, you're memorizing. I was kicked out for thought lifting. And that was life. That was it. That's just how it was going to be. So for the next few years, I thought I invented all the chords. I had names for them like Roy and Bill and Steve. I didn't know they existed, and they were G and C and D. So later on, I got really mad that they already, I didn't invent them, I suppose, you know. And that was life then. My kid comes along when he turns 16 and he gets a guitar. In fact, he gets this guitar. You got it if you bought a Volkswagen for that short period of time. It was a first act guitar. It was a cheap guitar, but it had humbucker pickups. It was actually a good sounding guitar, but a really cheap guitar. And he's going to ask me to teach him. And it's the first time he's ever asked me to teach him anything. Because my wife is an elementary teacher. She taught him to read, to write, to love math. She breastfed. I didn't have a role. Think about it. As a guy, you're supportive, but what can you do? I mean, really. I was a cheerleader. Lactate, lactate. Go ahead and lactate. Yay. I got nothing. But now he's got a guitar. He's going to ask me, so I'm practicing my speech. If you've got to learn the guitar, you need to dedicate yourself to at least an hour a day of drills and practice. I will help you. He doesn't come. He goes to his room, and I hear this sound. How is he accomplishing that? Yeah? Can I come in?
Sure.
Ben? Yeah? You need any help? He said, Dad, it's not personal. It's always personal when they start that way, you know? He said, I'm learning from a guy on YouTube. Now, I'm a digital guy, but this caught me off guard. I'm like, I didn't handle it well. I said, what? A guy on YouTube? I waited 16 years for this little jerk to need something from me, and he's learning from a guy on YouTube. I said, good, hope that works for you. By midnight, it was working quite well for him. He's playing parts of the song I've only dreamed of playing. And I bust into his room to see this man who's teaching my son guitar when it should be me. Here he is right here. Dad, it's not personal, but I can rewind this kid as many times as I want, and he doesn't know how many times it took me to figure it out. And I'm back in Miss Umbram's class. I get it. I'm learning from this kid when my kid's not home because he's really good. So the world changed. Suddenly there's all this stuff out there. How do we get it? How do we tame it? How do we bring it in? That's what conferences like this are about. How do we do that? Because we can now, right? So why wouldn't we try to do that? I want to share with you some ideas that I've been having with these digital tools. And you see I'm skipping a few things that I'll throw into my breakout session, but I want to take you right to this one here. I teach guitar, and I've been teaching guitar for a long time. I'm not great, but I'm good. I'm good at getting your kids started, but I'm not Juilliard, right? I can teach them the chords and some basic cool riffs and things like that. And so there's a lot of kids, I'm good enough to be their teacher. A lot of those kids quit me, and they quit me, guess where? At blisters. Most kids aren't braver than blisters. How do we get them past blisters? Is it possible that we can get them past blisters? And here's my other question. Are there cognitive blisters? Standing between kids and acquisition of math, science, physics, I wonder. See, braver than blisters is a hard thing to do. So if we can't use these tools to do something interesting, then we're just playing. So I start testing this. What can I really teach and what can I really learn using an iPhone, for instance, or an Android, or an iPad? So the first thing I did on here, being a guitar guy, I started using apps. The first app I found was Pocket Guitar for $1.99. You strum it. And by the way, you can't cheat. You have to know the chord.